Hey geeks, do you love comics, collectibles, and TCG? Well, here at Cardboard Cave, we have the place for you. Pass by Capitan Granuja Comics and Games and find all your favorite geeky items there. Look for them at Facebook or Instagram or call them at 787-659-7003. A store blessed by Nicole Bolas. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Cardboard Cave. And sorry that last week we couldn't have our episode. One of our hosts had no light. One of the other two, I think JP and Chris could do the live, but they, I think that they have not had the chance to like run the whole show. So probably they didn't want to do it themselves. And as well myself, I was not at the designated area to have my equipment set up and do the live, because I was actually that day mobile, because I thought that I was going to have time to say happy birthday to my fiance's mother and then go to the house and do everything there, but that's not what happened. But it's fine, because either way, it gave us time to prep ourselves for this episode. This episode, like, it's going to be pretty long, but we already have a couple of things that we're going to move for next Friday due to that preview season starts next week on June 29th, even though we already have a couple of previews out and a new mechanic for the Dungeons & Dragons Forgotten Realms. And remember, guys, you guys can follow us in your favorite podcast platform. Just go ahead and look for us as Cardboard Cave MTG or Cardboard Cave, but you guys can listen to us at any time, in your car, in the gym, while you're studying, at any time, at any moment. And plus, thanks to Chris, one of our hosts, actually we have our original YouTube channel back up and running, so you guys are watching us right now in that YouTube channel, and we are now up to episode 22 of this podcast. We were supposed to be, I think, up to episode 25 already, but due to the situations that have been happening, plus I miscounted all of the episodes, it's been kind of crazy. So I was like, we're not up to 25 yet, but we will get there. When we get to episode 25, like I mentioned before, we will be starting to give away these stained glass planeswalkers that we have sealed nicely for one of you guys. And as we mentioned the previous episode again, if you guys are watching us right now, go ahead. If you guys like the show and you guys want to be part of our show, at least as a guest, go ahead and write us in the chat or in one of our posts and just say, hey, I would like to participate in an episode, as well in our Commander Knights. So no further ado, let's go ahead and say hello to our host of tonight. And we got the one and only that have been the master of the cube, and the one and only that every time that you he gives you that small little pack of 15 cards or more, you won't get the cards that you need because he wants to keep them all, is the one and only JP.
Hey, what's up? So actually last Friday Chris was out.
Chris was out?
He was out. I was gonna be the only one there.
It would have been cool to have JP run his own show for that Friday. So then we got our one and only Oscar-winning director. He has directed a bajillion movies. He's worked with a bajillion different directors as well, and with a lot of famous actors and actresses. He's the one and only Alejandro.
You always spew these lies to the people.
One of these days, someone's gonna pop into the chat early and is like, "Oh wow, someone famous! Wow, I don't know his name."
It's like, no, not famous.
And then just kind of got disappointed.
Yeah, that's what's gonna happen.
Come on, guys. No, have faith.
You're famous in our hearts.
Aww. Exactly.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, guys, so this past week, we had a lot of things that we couldn't talk about. And I was speaking to JP, and we're going to leave. Remember that we did a whole episode of Mark Rosewater's list. Wait, was it Mark Rosewater's list? It was a big list that it was from, I think it was from Caldime or from...
You know, he's been doing one basically every set around.
Okay.
Pretty much.
So yeah. I spoke to JP. So next episode, like, is the start of preview season, official start of preview season. We're going to talk about that whole list because the list is pretty long. And as well, we're going to give our ideas of what to expect on the set. What cards do you think is going to come out, or what characters and whatnot like that. We can just have a lot of fun. And especially, I hope that Chris is in that one because he knows a lot of D&D. I think he sleeps, snorts, eats, and I don't know, but everything D&D. Yeah.
Everything's D&D, yeah.
So guys, so the previously released that Wizard of the Coast just released last month or this month. This month. Has been the magical Modern Horizons 2 set. That cards were expensive from the start, then they started plummeting. Then
they're still plummeting a bit. The ones that are, that basically have no play and will see no play or haven't gotten, like the enchantment deck. I haven't seen the enchantment deck take off, and a lot of those cards I've seen them even drop in price.
Yep.
It's kind of funny how it basically dropped like a week ago, and we're already getting spoilers for the next set. But
yes,
and that's magic only, right now.
Exactly, and not only that, we're getting spoilers of the new set. The set is coming out next month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they're not giving us a break. They're not giving us a break. I think Orengo was the one that mentioned it in our chat. He's like, can you guys just give us a break? A break.
Yeah, it's so much.
So we're going to talk about that in the next topic in a little bit. But guys, okay. What do you guys think about, in general, Modern Horizons 2? Did you guys like it? Did you enjoy it? At least in my side, I mentioned it in the chat. In my two collector booster boxes, I got a Cabal Coffers borderless foil, two of them.
And you didn't. Each. And you didn't gift it to me.
And by the time that was still in pre-order, in the pre-orders phase, it was still like around like $200. And I was so happy about it. And then when I entered TCG Player to sell it, it was like 96. I'm like, damn it.
Yeah, that happens.
It plummeted like hell. Whoever bought them, bought both of them at the same time. He was a happy customer.
Why have you guys one think? When you can have two?
Exactly. So what do you guys think? Do you guys enjoy the set? Do you guys like the cards that were available in the set? Especially the fetch lands that I think that they're still like around $20 depending on the colors that you want.
The two cheapest ones are around $20. Arid Mesa and Marsh Flats are less than $30 at minimum.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they're less than $30. They're not cheaper than $20, and I don't think they ever got to be cheaper than $20
at one point. For like they did. For like a hot minute.
Yeah.
Like a hot minute they dipped.
In my case, I would like them, but nothing like pressuring me to absolutely get them, since the format I play is Commander, and you don't 100% need anything in Commander. Especially in mana base, you can just fill them with basics.
Nice.
Hey, my mono black Ayana.
Yeah, it's a mono black deck. Of course, you don't need any fetches. Say that to a three color deck. Say that to a five color deck. Say to the people, stick basics in your five color deck. See how that goes.
Play two color decks. It's easy.
No, anyways.
What if the people want to play five color? They should.
Too
be
bad.
Oh, too bad. Exactly. See, so you do need them. You do need them for certain scenarios.
For certain scenarios, but not everything needs them. The cards in general, I like that a lot of decks have been formed. I've seen a lot of zoo decks, like different zoo decks that just start jamming in as many card archetypes that they can. I was watching a stream earlier, watching the Golgari food deck, because I just really like that deck. They played like a four color zoo deck. It could have been even five colors, but I didn't get to see any black cards. It had Ignoble Hierarch, so they had the possibility of black mana. Mm-hmm. But every land they played were of everything but black mana. And it was just basically a very value-based because they went turn one Ignoble Hierarch, turn two Cascade with Shardless Agent, and they got Lightning Helix. It was very value-centric. And another turn, they played, since they're in the colors, they could play a Bloodbraid Elf.
Yeah.
The dream would be called Bloodbraid Elf into Shardless Agent into something else. But it's very value based, but it couldn't keep up with the value that the Golgari food deck was making.
Because Ursa's Saga.
Do you guys
actually know
Ursa's Saga?
He won the first game because Ursa's Saga.
Okay.
The second game, as soon as he went turn one tap land, turn two underworld cookbook, discard Cauldron Familiar, make a food token, pay one Azmarana Mardikat, Istina Kuldakar, and then sacrifice the food token for the familiar, and the opponent scooped.
Yeah, exactly. So they didn't get to see how
they screwed over.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of blue like Esper control decks with a lot of the removal. I've seen Ursa's Saga in those Esper control decks.
Yeah.
I started seeing like Jund is playing Ursa's Saga.
Oh, I saw a Jund deck that didn't have red, but they call it Jund.
That's stupid.
It's essentially Jund.
It's rocks then.
Exactly. It's not Jund, like, but people
it's call rocks. It
Jund. But, yeah,
no. But that's it's an old archetype because it's not. It was basically not played in a long time. But moderns just green black, value Tarmogoyf and removal with discard. That's just green black rocks. I don't know why they called it rocks, but it was basically just rocks.
It's just weird. They just calling it like, oh yeah, it's Jund. And I saw the deck list. I'm like, it's Jundless red. Okay. Cool.
It happens. It happens.
It's weird.
I mean, it's kind of funny how the name kind of reminds me of back in Counts of Tarkir Standard, there's the Jeskai Black deck.
Yeah.
It was just Jeskai colors splashing black for like one card. And it was like that standard was horrific.
Yeah.
But anyways, continue to Mono Horizons. It's just a lot of interesting rules. Nothing I feel like has stuck as much. Like nothing completely oppressive other than one card, which we've already mentioned, which is Ursa's Saga.
Yeah.
Ursa's Saga. Ursa's Saga might be a bit of a problem.
I'm surprised. Like, when I saw Ursa's Saga spoiled, I think I mentioned this before, I saw it like, oh, that's great for Commander. I never thought that if it would have been used in Modern, it would be used like in like artifact-centric builds. But the fact that everyone just realized, you know, better people than me, realized this is literally just free value all the way. You lose nothing by putting this land. And it's a land, too. So it's very difficult to like interact with. You have to like think, you have to have a lot of stuff already kind of built in to interact with the stupid land. Mm-hmm. And even then you get to go off at least at worst with a construct, and at best with a second construct, and you get to tutor something either to get to the second loop of the second thing with an expedition map, or just like a pithing needle, or like you said, the cookbook, or the oven, or just there's just so many great value things you can pluck from the deck. It's insane. Like, there's literally no reason why not to run it. And that's what a lot of pro players are debating. The fact that there's way too much inherent value in this. And since everyone's playing it, it's becoming a big problem. Sure, there's still diversity, I guess, in the meta. But to be fair, and you did mention it, the food decks are clearly dominating. Like, a lot. Like, maybe the affinity ones are kind of...
They lose to combo 100% of the time.
Sure,
basically.
But everything loses to everything when you like think about it too much.
Like,
I mean,
like,
there has
Amulet, like right. I'm looking at MTG Goldfish right now in the modern metagame. Amulet Titan is the top top deck right now, and it's 4.4% of the meta, and Amulet Titan beats Hell's Kitchen. But that's interesting. That's a nice name, Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, I like it. Overall with the set, I loved it. Great, great bunch of cards. Like all of them, they're
I have my squirrels ready.
Oh God, we need to play them.
Yeah, I have like the essential things from Modern Horizon. Yeah. I even got to pull the Hermit Druid. I got to pull that, and I literally, like, I'm still looking. I have Chatterfang's foil, but the old, the normal one. I am trying to see if I can find somebody that has the borderless foil one to see if I can, like, trade or see what I can do, you know, to get the borderless one. I like the art of the borderless one more. But I already got a couple of things. I just need to sit down and see what I want to do as a commander. Is it full tokens? Is it sacrifice tokens? You know, because I have the famous artifact that you can sacrifice a token and put a counter on it, and it's like a lord but in an enchantment. So I'm trying to see what I'm going to build, but Chatterfangs will be my official second, like, commander, like the Golos one, you know. So, and then the other one is the elves one that I'm little by little trying to see if I can find the lords that I'm missing, like, that I can go ahead and finish that one. But this set, I actually did like it. In terms of pull rates, I did not like the pull rate of the set booster box. It was really wonky. I got more fetch lands in the collector booster boxes than in the set booster box. And I got a variety. I got borderless and retro foil etched.
Kind of remember that when you opened the set booster box on stream, you got a foil... So technically that doesn't count towards the number of fetches because it's foil.
Yeah,
and foils can be are technically random. So you technically, in theory, got no fetches in that
box.
Yeah,
you got a bad box.
Bad box.
No way.
Four rares per pack. At least in a few packs you pulled like four rares.
Yeah, but there were some packs that would pull like three mythics.
True.
It was pretty insane.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting still. Like, it was still interesting and fun, but it's leaning on that I really don't like the fact that Wizard of the Coast is pushing us. If you want the buy a box promo, you have to buy the set booster box. That's the only thing that I really don't like. Mm-hmm. Because you get less boosters, either way, you get more rares. But the draft booster box, I've seen openings and they get more fetches than the regular set booster boxes. And and plus, I understand that the art card series, there's a market for that, because there's even art cards that go for $6-$7 if they have like the golden signature, but it's a slot that could have been another card or a foil token or a foil land. Yeah. You guys know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of the things that I did like, the collector booster box would bring you foil etched basics in each one. Yeah.
It did.
That's interesting.
I was like, nah, this is only one thing. But no, it kept on. Then later during, I have to sit down and look at the foils again, but it was really interesting that some of the retro frames cards, that some of them, I have a couple that, let's put an example, the Shenanigans. I have a Shenanigans foil and a Shenanigans foil etched. The foil one, the lettering, the whole card is off, like the off-centered. The letters don't are not in their respective area. Everything is off. It looks like if it was
this is a foil.
Yeah, foil.
Okay, and
the foil etched was fine.
That's odd, because what I've noticed is the foil etched are the ones that are like little.
No, at least for me, the foil ones are the ones that are off, like really off. Even the mana base is off as well. Okay. Later on, I'm gonna sit down, look at the cards, and just take pictures to post them in the page.
Yeah.
But guys, so now Modern Horizons, I liked it. It was fun. It was too expensive, though. I will still say that. I think we talked about that in the previous episode. We mentioned that it's too expensive. The collectors were going for $4.15, and they're still rising. Right now, the collectors are for $4.20 in some stores.
But online, if you go to TCG Player, or like eBay, they were fluctuating to a certain point. I think it was Amazon. You could get the collectors for like $3.10.
Well, last
and the draft and set, you could get them as low as, and I did see this, for $2.15. It's not the case anymore. It's now for $2.30-ish, but they did go way down. Like, I know you bought them, I think, at $2.80.
The set booster at $2.80.
Exactly.
And the collectors at $4.15.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So they did kind of like crash too. I think it might be because the initial burst of you know the amount of product available. I guess they thought había like escasez. What was escasez again? I forgot.
Yeah, that there was a shortage.
There was a shortage, I guess, or they assumed there was some type of shortage. But when you check, like right now, I'm literally on Amazon. The set booster $3.40. And the Magic Booster, the draft one, $2.35. And if you want the collector, it is for $3.73. That did go up dramatically, to be fair. But I did see it as low as $3.10.
Okay.
So it's interesting. I don't know. Like, it's fluctuating. All these things are fluctuating. We got to consider that if Wizards was not lying to us and this is going to be a print to demand, like, it's going to keep being printed and printed so stores can keep getting more of this product later down the line, the prices should stabilize. Actually, yeah.
Literally, do like alpha investments, buy like 4 crates and be a happy cookie. And leave them in your storage.
Yeah, like if you have the expendable money, because that's exactly usually the problem with people who don't have that much cash, it can just sink into one product. That's the problem.
And I have one thing to add to it from Horizons is the comments. So there's this one comment I keep seeing in different modern decks, and I've seen it at Popper. And I think I saw it in a few legacy decks, and I feel like that's absurd, especially because it's a one mana green card. It's called Abundant Harvest.
Yeah,
yeah.
It makes no sense. You choose a non-land or a land, and then start revealing the top until you reveal the chosen card, and then put it into your hand. So you draw a card, and you can guarantee you draw action and not lands if you're mana flooded.
Yeah,
for one mana, I feel like that's
well, there is
being a common is the problem.
I don't know if it's an uncommon or a common, but there is a red card that's dragon something. That's
Dragon Rage Sanderler.
I guess, yeah, that's like
one mana, 1/1 that whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you surveil one.
I think so. Yeah, that's the one. That one was, I sold one for $5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's used a lot in the Blitz deck, because she pumps herself up. And that's Shadow decks that use a lot of non-creature spells. She's used a lot. It's actually very, very useful. And being one mana is very huge for that type of deck.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be $5. That's absurd to me. But, you know, it's like the hype right now.
Yeah, yes, it is. Yes.
The other card I want to talk about is Chatterstorm, because I mentioned Popper, and that's going to be banned soon, man. That has to be banned soon. I've been watching Caleb Gannon, and he brewed this deck, and he wins turn two, turn three, because you do nothing if you just Chatterstorm. But he built the deck with this common card that I never even saw, because it just kind of went under the radar. It's called First Day of Class, and it's Strixhaven. What it does is whenever it's First Day of Class, it's a one and a red for a sorcery. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield this turn, it gets a +1/+1 counter and haste. But all he needs is to cast that card with a storm count of 10 and cast the... Or storm count of 9 and then cast a Chatterstorm on turn 2, having 20 damage. Yep. And he does that consistently.
Yep. That's on Popper, right?
That's on Popper, yeah.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, most of the cards are legal in Modern.
Yeah.
I think I think the big one is Dark Ritual. Like, Dark Ritual. He runs a one-off of Cabal Ritual. Those two are the ones that are in Lotus Battle.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm missing one other card. I think Land Grant, because it's rather important, because the deck runs six lands.
Okay.
And plays consistently. It's crazy.
Nice. That's interesting.
I have to check into some gameplay.
Oh yeah. I'll send you links. Like
send them.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So that deck just loses to Affinity pretty easily, though.
Okay.
So it's interesting how Affinity is still the top. I was checking just right now because I was in the MTG Goldfish page. Affinity is still top in Popper. Because Affinity runs a sideboard option against that deck and a main board option that goes against that deck and several others. Okay. So it can beat him in two ways. But he has one, but that one deck beats him. But it's interesting. Maybe not. I think it should be banned. But at the same time, if that's banned, why isn't anything from Popper banned in Affinity? Because it's pretty consistent.
Well, they did ban Cranial Plating back in the day because they had to.
I mean, yeah, that's a given, but...
I mean, but that's because they decided to keep the lands, and then in Modern, they took out the lands.
Yeah.
And now they put back lands, but it doesn't matter because the deck is way more consistent. It doesn't even need those artifact lands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would say that one day we should sit down and instead of playing Commander, we should play Pauper.
Sure. I have a Pauper deck.
I have to build one, though. I used to have a couple, but yeah. So, guys, preview season starts on June 29th. But we've been getting previews either way, plus a new mechanic for the new set of Forgotten Realms, Dungeons and Dragons. So here's a few of the cards with the distinct, borders.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the borderless, that's Alan Wake, Tumblestrom. We have the D&D style book, that's the Evolving Wilds. That they are a couple of them. There's a couple of them out there. Then we have the showcase that is the Nadar Selfless Paladin. And then we got the promo cards for FNM that are on the promo packs, Portable Hole. So these are four of the spoilers that got in for the new set of Ventures in the Forgotten Realms of Dungeons and Dragons. It looks really interesting. One of the things I'm really interested in, now that the next one, it will be for the new mechanic. So, Alan Wake has a number one plus loyalty ability that's called Venture into the Dungeon. Then she has the minus two, look at the top six cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card from among them and put it into your hand. If it's a legendary, gain 3 life. Put the rest at the bottom in the library in a random order. And the other one is you get an emblem that creatures you control have trample and haste and get 2+2 for each different named dungeon you've completed. Jesus. And then the Nadar Selfless Paladin, Vigilance, one white and a two. Vigilance, whenever Nadar Paladin enters the battlefield or attacks, venture into the dungeon. Other creatures you control get +1/+1 as long as you've completed a dungeon. So I was happy until I saw that is as long as you've completed a dungeon. I would have liked that portion of the line was not there. Like, there could be a lord for white.
Just a generic lord.
Exactly.
Okay.
A generic lord. And then we got Portable Hole. It's an artifact one that says when Portable Hole enters the battlefield, exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls with mana value 2 or less until Portable Hole leaves the battlefield. Thank God that this does not say flash, because holy cow.
Does it need it? Like, it says
it doesn't need it.
It's already broke as hell.
Yeah, I know.
At mana value 2, I feel like it's not as broken. It's just a sorcery.
Mana value 2?
Yeah, mana value 2 or less.
Okay. You mean talking about the effect,
just a permanent sorcery-based Fatal Push, and Fatal Push is just better than this. I don't feel like...
But it's non-land permanent. That's the thing that...
That's the value right there.
I'm not 100% sure I'm like sold on this.
I saw some people when they were talking about it, when it was spoiled, because this was spoiled like ages ago.
Yeah.
They were at least Seth was debating that this thing would overtake the other cards it's used a lot in modern, the one mana exile something of mana value 1. I think it's called. Mm-hmm. I forgot the name of the card, but it's the card that came out on a corset.
Isolate.
Yeah, the corset card. Yeah, and this thing, it's strictly better because it's still one mana
and it eliminates something
two or less. Sure, it's an artifact. Ideally, it would have been better if it was an enchantment, but you know, I think it's pretty strong. It won't be as strong in standard. I think there's way better stuff in standard.
Yeah, but
I think in modern
that takes that away Aether Vial.
That takes away Chalice of Void if they haven't put it on one. Yeah, it takes.
There's a lot of things. It takes a couple of things for modern.
Yeah, because it's targeting all land. Yeah. Well, mana value. No, we can't do Chalice, but we can do Aether Vial for sure.
We can do Aether Vial.
Yeah. But yeah,
you can do Chalice of Void.
Can you? I get confused with the mana value thing.
The mana value of Chalice of Void is 0.
Right, two or less. Yeah,
got you. Perfect, you're good. Okay then, yeah.
So what you guys think, while Orengo is about to continue, but what you guys think about these styles that are gonna come out for this set?
I do not play any DNB. Fabiola knows this, you guys knows this. I played like 2 mini campaigns when I was like in a Denny's once, and I mean, it's cool. It's fun, I guess. I love the hell out of the book style showcase, and yes. I don't play D&D.
Evolving Wilds or the Nerdara?
No, the Evolving Wilds.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I love
the modules.
I love the module ones.
And yeah.
I love the design space of what you can do with these, because it's, for some reason, even though the design is so much out there in comparison to what other things we've had, excluding Secret Lair, because Secret Lair has been its own thing, but this is its own thing, and it still feels like it belongs in Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
Like the design doesn't feel too out there.
It's getting there. It's getting into the almost too out there section, like when Secret Lair introduced those metal art sheets, you know?
That was
the one that you were like thinking already, like, oh, it's interesting, but it's getting a little out there. And this one's getting in the a little out there section, but I still like it. Like if Wizards is just gonna play around with the frame and the style and the showcase. And I know some people were adamant about these type of changes because, you know, they like some level of consistency. They like the earlier showcases where they still structurally felt like a Magic card.
Yeah.
But now that we're playing with basically everything in the card, and they don't seem to be stopping. Like, they're just going to keep plowing through with their own style and design space.
You still have access to the actual card that just has the normal structure of the card.
Yeah.
So you don't need to... of this.
Yeah, people, don't buy them like that. They can stay cheap and we can buy them all.
But yeah, I want to like buy a few ones. Like the Obi Wilds, it'd be fun to have a couple for Commander.
Yeah.
So when people see this weird purple card that I'm cracking, they're like, what the hell are you cracking? Oh, it's an Evolving Wilds. You know, it's because the cool thing is, since it's going to be like a type of core set, we're going to get a lot of basic. Like Negate is probably going to have like a thing like that. Probably,
yeah.
You know, and like a Lightning Strike is probably going to get like a version.
Kind of sad. Kind of sad how Counterspell is a spell in D&D. And they're not printing Counterspell.
Oh, they're not doing that.
They're not, dude. No. Come on.
They're, you know what? Wizards, do it. Do it, you cowards. Print Counterspell in standard. Do it, you cowards. You don't care anymore. You don't care anymore,
really,
right? You want to make the game fun? We'll make it fun. Make it fun now.
Yes. But you know what? It's really cool because we're getting to a point that Wizard of the Coast is actually banking on fandoms.
Oh yeah,
they're banking on fandoms.
They're not even hiding it.
No, we're gonna get to Secret Lair in a second, but I'm gonna mention now. They mentioned about the Stranger Things one. Yes. Yeah, we still don't know what it is, mm-hmm. but they're gonna be cards that are legal in format. So
I cast 11 to kill your commander. Okay, well, I'm casting the Demogorgon. Oh no!
Actually, it's interesting how the Demogorgon is still actual D&D card.
Yeah, so. I know.
Exactly. Yes.
There's that. But
I mean, I'm pretty sure they planned it out like that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure when this set comes out, the Secret Lair, once the summer drop is over.
There's not gonna be a Demogorgon card. Not gonna be a Demogorgon card.
Okay.
If there is, because there's just two major demon lords that come to mind when thinking of, because where do you have a devil? So the devil is like, that's just a little heads up for next week, basically, when we discuss the little spoiler
list. Cards. Yeah.
In the list, there's a devil god. There is no writing for a demon god, but there may be. And if there is, then it's either Orcus or Asmodeus. Orcus or Demogorgon. And if they do the Demogorgon and then do it in the Secret Lair, that'd be really cool. So there's just a few things to watch out for.
Yeah, it is. So guys, so the next thing that they did announce, I think it was this week, is that we have a new mechanic. The new mechanic is called Venture the Dungeon, and is that certain cards will have certain triggers that either if the card does comeback damage, enters the battlefield, or like the planeswalker that just plus one and venture the dungeon. We have these cards are the dungeon cards that I didn't see if there is a place for this, or if this is a card that goes on your 60.
How the card works is it's in your sideboard, but it doesn't cost any sideboard slots.
Exactly.
So you technically can have all three of these in your slot, in your sideboard, at the same time. So you can have technically 15 cards in your 18 cards in your sideboard.
Okay.
When you venture them to a dungeon for the first time, if you don't have a dungeon in play, you choose one of these and put it into play, and you just do the first effect. Every single time you venture into the dungeon, you keep going into another room, and you keep doing the effects. There's gonna be a little, like they mentioned, a little counter how they're gonna move it around, but I guess you just use your dice to mark where you're at, and each one you start venturing deeper and deeper and deeper until you get to the last effect. When you finish the last effect, it is exiled, but I'm not 100% sure if it's exiled to your sideboard again.
Yes,
it is exiled to your sideboard again, because you can do it again. Yeah, so it's exiled to your sideboard again, and then when you venture again, you can just do that same one again and again and again and again and again and again.
You know what? Having this here, it gives me the chills, because remember, you guys, I mentioned that I wanted to do a Dungeons and Dragons commander with the party mechanic. I can now do the party mechanic and the venture the dungeon.
The dungeon, yeah.
Yeah.
So a thing to note about this mechanic, it's going to be legal in commander.
Yes.
Yes, it's gonna be legal in commander.
And of course, also, it had to be. Like, there was no question about that.
These three are the only dungeons in the set.
Yes.
What? And
yes, there's no more dungeons.
No. Which is odd. I found it very odd.
These three are the only dungeons in the set, and in the commander decks, there's no other dungeons. These three are the only ones in the entire thing.
Yeah.
The only dungeons that exist. So it's kind of in a way it's kind of disappointing, but in a way it's fine, because Dungeon of the Mad Mage is bonkers.
Okay, so let's read the card that we have here that is Shortcut Seeker. So one blue and three human rogue that whenever Shortcut Seeker deals damage, combat damage to a player, venture into a dungeon, and it's a 2/5.
Yes.
It's interesting. It's horrible. But I know, it's horrible. Rocker. It's, oh my god.
It's limited.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think of it this way. Think of it in like whenever heal deals combat damage, you either scry one, you gain a life, or each player loses a life.
Yeah, no.
This becomes extremely modal.
Mm-hmm.
So
at least in the first one.
Yeah. Then the next time you do it, you either make a goblin token, treasure token, scry one, or each player loses 2 life unless they discard a card, or the Oubliette, which is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Discard a card and sacrifice an artifact, or a creature and a land.
Mm-hmm.
Tomb of Annihilation gives you reading each one. Tomb of Annihilation is the first run, trapped entry, each player loses a life. You get to choose which side you go towards, which is either Veils of Fear, which in which you lose 2 life unless you discard a card. Then after that, you keep on going to Sandfall Cell. Each player loses 2 life unless they sacrifice an artifact, creature, or land. And then you get to the Cradle of the Death God, which you create a 4/4 God Horror token with that touch. Or you just go from Trapped Entry to Oubliette and discard a card, sacrifice an artifact, creature, and a land. And then you get to the Cradle of the Death God. And maybe someone's gonna make this the Oubliette phase an upside, or if there's a venture a good enough venture card for either red or a red or an aggro style deck, you can lose 1 life, then 2 life, then 2 life, and making them discard and sacrificing, it's potentially 5 life, and then you get a 4/4 to try to finish them off. It's interesting if they do an aggressive card that can venture into the dungeon several times, or at least easier than Shortcut Seeker. The first card shown was Lost Mine of Phandelver, which is the cave entrance. You scry one, you either choose the Mine Tunnels or the Goblin Lair, which you get a 1/1 Goblin Creature Token. Then you choose again, either Store Room, which you put a +1 counter on a creature, or Dark Pool. Each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. And then the last one is Temple of Dumathoin, which is you just draw a card. Or instead of going to the Goblin Lair, you go to Mine Tunnels, create a treasure token, then the Fulgani Cavern, fire creature gets might of 4, -0 until end of turn, and then you draw a card. This one, I feel like it's gonna be like if the venture into the dungeon mechanic becomes a thing in Standard, I feel like Lost Mines of Phandelver are going to be the thing that's going to be fueling most of the things. Because you can scry one, make a treasure token, protect yourself, and then draw a card. And that line of four feels much more natural. The last card is Dungeon of the Mad Mage. You get the Yawning Portal, you gain 1 life, then the dungeon level, you scry one. You get 2 options. Either Goblin Bazaar, where you create a treasure token, or Twisted Caverns, where your target creature can't attack until your next turn. Which again is very good for like a controlling deck that has a good adventure mechanic. A good adventure card actually exists. This might be good. Then you scry 2 in the last level. You get the Runestone Caverns, which you can exile the top 2 cards of your library and you may play them. Notably, it does not say without paying the mana cost, you still have to pay, but it's basically drawing you 2 cards and you have to play them right then and there. Moiral's Graveyard, create 2/1/1 black skeleton creature tokens. Again, another way to protect yourself. The Deep Mines, which is Scry 3, and the actual payoff, which is Mad Wizard's Lair. You draw 3 cards and reveal them. You may cast one of them without paying its mana cost, which is rather strong.
Progenitus. Oh, sorry.
Yes. So each one of them, like, I feel like if anything, Tomb of Annihilation in an aggressive deck, Dungeon of the Mad Mage, and Lost of Minds of Phandelver could be in any deck that actually makes it work.
Okay.
For Standard, I feel like this is going to be, people might, you know, experiment, unless the mechanic is horrible. If there's no better venture into the dungeon cards, then the probability of this being a proper thing is very minimal. But I like the design space of Lost Mines of Phandalfr and Dungeon of the Mad Mage, because it's kind of it's reminiscent of sagas and the design space within them. So
yeah, two things I wanted to mention with regards to the dungeon. First thing is it's going to depend heavily, like JP said, when depending on the cards that come out in this set that adventure into a dungeon, that's how playable this mechanic is going to be.
Strong, yeah.
The Strixhaven mechanic in Standard has been pretty decent, but the problem has always been that the lesson cards are basically 1.5 mana overcosted. That's why it's not like heavily skewed, and that's why you don't see it in Modern. You see it in Standard because it's still pretty good in Standard. You're getting a freebie card from your sideboard. And you get to choose the card even though it's a little more heavily costed. The thing to think about here is that Wizards is trying to do that fine balance of making sure, I guess, it's not too Ikoria-ish, where you have mechanics that people don't even touch. You don't want to make it too Strixhaven-y, where you have lessons and mechanics that people don't care about.
But you don't want Eldraine.
Exactly. But you don't want to skew to the other side. Energy. You don't want to skew to energy. Yeah. Where the problem with energy was that cards were aggressively costed, like they costed what they were supposed to cost, but on top of it, they gave you free energy. Like when you think of Aether Thune, Thune with Aether, which basically you get a card, you get a land,
and you get two energy.
And you get two energy. The other one where you basically he's like a three mana, the
lightning strike, gave you three energy.
Exactly.
Hardness lightning, you could deal more damage than three.
You can deal more damage. Exactly. And it started at three. It was a lightning strike with upside if you had stored energy. So it's gonna depend very heavily on how many of these cards are costed in a way where it's a normal magic card and then they also venture. And if that's the case, it might become a broken problem. The second thing I wanted to talk about, it's because people addressed it in Reddit. No, I'm sorry, in Twitter. Some people are kind of upset because this just shows you more of the parasitic design that Wizards has been claiming they don't want to do. Parasitic design, for people who don't know, is when Wizards introduces these new mechanics and they only introduce it for one set and then they abandon them. Either because it's too powerful, because it doesn't match with the aesthetic of the next set or whatever, and they never touch them again. And they said, no, it's not parasitic. We could maybe look into this into the future. And then people started wondering, okay, so if you do a theoretical Dungeons & Dragons 2 set, right? Can we utilize these dungeons plus the new dungeons that you introduced? And they're like, no, it's going to be tied to the set. So no matter what you think and what you do, these dungeons are tied to this set. I'm just kind of upset that for a Dungeons & Dragons set, the venture idea, amazing. I love the idea. It's great. It makes sense with the mechanic. I like the idea that it's like JP said, it's a saga, albeit it's a free saga, which is a little problematic because it's a saga you can't interact with. You know, gotta consider that, which is a bit of a problem. But besides that, it's pretty cool mechanically. I'm just upset they only gave you three. They should have given you more. It's literally called Dungeons and Dragons, and I'm pretty sure they're gonna skew on the dragon part, no problem. But the dungeon part, they kind of like missed the mark in terms of designing more of these.
That's true.
I wish I would have done like two more, just to have five. In regards to the three dungeons, I originally thought that you had to like shuffle and get one random one. But Wizards already said that you can choose which one you like. I like that actually, because when I read them all, I kind of realized, okay, like if you need to make sure you finish the dungeon quickly, you can be risky and do the Tomb of Annihilation, which at the end you do end up with a 4-4.
But so. you don't have to run all three.
Oh no, you don't. But why wouldn't you?
No, just in case. In the case that it would have been random, or you shuffle, just don't run Tomb of Annihilation.
Oh, yeah, of course. But I like the idea of being able to choose, because, for example, if you have that card, for example, the Nadir, you want to complete a dungeon quick. So you're like, okay, I need to do Tomb of Annihilation. It's only three levels. I get to do this because I get to Nadir. Maybe I can blink him, and then they can attack next turn, and then I'll obliterate myself. I don't care because I just need to finish a dungeon. You know what I mean? So it's kind of cool that you get to choose, basically screwing yourself over, so you can get a dungeon completion very quickly, or you can play essentially what you call the long game with the dungeon of the Mad Mage, which is basically the broken dungeon, but it's 7 levels, so it takes you a while to complete. Theoretically, this is assuming that these venture cards seem to be like what this Shortcut Seeker and what Nadir are suggesting. When you play them, when you attack, when it enters the battlefield, if they introduce like a weird artifact that you kind of like, oh, you tap it and you venture deeper, and then you can untap it and retap it, untap it, retap.
Or a creature that says whenever you venture into the dungeon, venture twice.
Oh yeah, something ridiculous like a Panharmonicon, did you venture? Or yeah, like a spell, like an Athumith Aether that you basically, oh, you get to search for a land and you venture deeper. If they start introducing crazy stuff like that.
A very early venture would be a problematic.
Yes. One mana upside card that also ventures you.
You just mentioned it.
Yeah. If they did something like that. Yeah, if they do an attune.
But imagine if they do an attune with Aether venture card, that would be ridiculous.
It would be kind of ridiculous.
If the only thing the card did was venture, I don't think it would be that much of a problem.
Oh no. But it needs to do, that's what I'm saying. It needs to do something else. Now you give that example, I think the new Planeswalker sucks, because the fact that she only does a +1 and she ventures,
and Dick, yeah.
If it did something else, if it said scry 1, if it literally just said scry 1 and venture, that'd be amazing. But it literally just says venture. And you're already paying 4 mana for 4 loyalty Planeswalker, that sure you can venture. And the -2 is actually pretty good. But that +1...
The other thing is that the legendary Planeswalker Ellie Wick, you know, it's really interesting that the card does not have a very certain synergy with, like, if you think about it as a commander player, you can put it in any green commander deck. Mm-hmm. Yes, because you can look for the card when you -2, but you still have to, you know, either the way that the dungeons are legal in Commander, then you have to see which one of these three goes with the Commander, like that you can get that
run all plus.
You can run all three.
You don't need to limit yourself. That's kind of the cool thing about this. You can just have all three, and then you have choices.
You kind of mentioned, she plus ones and doesn't scry one, but just +1 into Lost Mine of Pandelver, and then
you
scry one.
I know, but what I'm saying is, it becomes better when. But that's what they don't want to do. I know, I understand that's because of energy. They don't want to do exactly that. They don't want to have a card that's just a normal
just
magic
imagine.
Card, and on top of it, adventures. I understand. You know,
imagine +1 ventures, scry one.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
I'm like, I don't like it.
Scry one venture, and then I get to
and
scry
then
again.
Scry another one venture.
You know what? Why not? This is Dungeons and Dragons, Adventures of the Forgotten Realm. Give me everything, damn it! Don't limit yourself.
Yeah, this set is going to be really, really fun. I hope that all the products and in previous seasons we get a lot of great cards, and I hope that the Stranger Things Secret Lair has to do with this set as well. It would be pretty cool, because we all know, if you've seen Stranger Things season 1 is very, very highly based on D&D. So, you know, and this set is really cool because as well you can get D&D players that never played Magic to play Magic. Either way, if it's a draft or if they want to build their own little small 60 Dungeons and Dragons deck, or drag them into Commander.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways to bring new players in. But so next Friday, we're going to be tackling that list, and then we're going to give our predictions of the set, see what's going to come out. I'm really interested in this. I really do like it. What do you want to say, Morengo?
The last thing I wanted to say is this, not going to lie, guys, this is going to be the set that I was going to be like, I don't want to buy anything because it's Dungeons & Dragons. I don't know much about it. Like, it's cool that you guys love it, but I'm very casual on Dungeons & Dragons. But that book showcase frame, god dang it. Like, I want to buy like staple-y, you know, quote unquote cards that I might be able to use. I want to buy them.
This is the core set one, right?
So yeah, maybe Fabled, that's what I'm saying.
Maybe a Fabled Passage one.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, maybe they will, pretty sure they will reprint Fabled Passage because they need to. You're right.
You think Fabled Passage? Because isn't Fabled Passage a promo if you buy product?
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. The thing is that they already kind of established that Fabled Passage is our fixed fetch. Yeah, our fair fetch.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why. That's why I'm saying, like, yeah, like, I would love to buy a couple of Fabled Passages in that frame. Because I'm pretty sure the lands, because they did leak one. We didn't reveal it, but they did leak, like, a red mana one. Like one that comes on tap unless you have more than two lands and stuff like that, and you get to make goblins. It's a kind of powerful land, you know, for standard purposes. I don't think
it's a I think if I'm mistaken, is Gen of the Bugbear.
Yeah.
That enters untapped. As long as you control two or less lands,
exactly.
It's a fast land for red, but being just for red, and it's a man land, and it's a one and a red to make a 3/2.
Yeah. Hopefully the blue one is broke as hell, and I get to like scry 4 or something ridiculous. I don't know.
Fine, it's fine.
It'd be cool. But yeah, like, I wasn't really interested, but now I want to see what all the venture cards are. Because it'd be cool to kind of like craft a little cute D&D commander deck with it. There's like a 5-color one that you can like stick in all these janky venture cards into. But at least, at the very least, I do want to get the book showcase, because that framing is so bizarre and interesting.
Yeah, the book showcases is a win.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It's cool.
And thinking about the whole commander thing, you can actually mix this with the party mechanic. It goes really fine with each other.
So let's speculate. Do you think they're going to put the party mechanic here? We still haven't had any confirmation nor...
True.
I really do wish they do.
Yeah.
I really do wish that they do, actually. It would make sense.
Yes, same. It would kind of make sense. Ridiculously stupid that they introduced that mechanic a few sets back.
And not bringing it back.
And not bringing it back here. Yeah, I agree.
That, like, with the set that actually makes sense.
Exactly. I agree very much. I hope that they don't be like, oh, well, you know, we already put a freaking adventure dungeon. We're good. We're not going to put anything different. We're going to put the basic stuff because it's a core set, too. It's like, you should have put party stuff here. Yeah.
It is. So, guys, so the next thing is that we're going to be talking about is that we're in summer. And you know what happens in summer with Magic the Gathering and Wizard of the Coast? They want to take your money because the new summer drop is out with a lot of goodies. And we're going to be skimming them all down, and then we're going to give our general likes and dislikes of the set. So we're going to have the first one that we have here is the Mother of Runes playset with different art and the Praetors with the Phyrexian language.
Thing to note, the Mother of Runes one is Rebecca Guay art. That's the appeal to it.
I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
I use Mother of Runes all the time. So I really love it.
Beautiful playset. And the Praetors, very good.
Yes, and then
it's just the Praetors. Yeah,
it's the Praetors. So the other thing is that each of these are gonna have the same treatment as always. You can either get them non-foil or foil, or buy them by sets. The complete set of having them all 8 drops will cost you $444 to have them both non-foil and foil. So you'll have a total of 16 boxes.
Yeah.
The next two sets is the Dungeons & Dragons Saturday morning set. And I don't know this artist, because this was another artist invitee. Let me see if I can go. Let me go to see. I should have left the Secret Lair page open.
That is the Fiona.
Fiona?
Okay. Fiona Staples.
Okay, let me go ahead and enter the sale. Okay, let's go. Okay, so to give more details, so you can get the following. There's 3 bundles. There is the totally refreshing non-foil that will bring you all of the sets, non-foil versions for $199. And then you have the all-natural foil bundle that will be for $269. And then you have the All For You bundle that it will include, like I mentioned, the foil and non-foil versions of the cards for $444. So if you are really interested in the set, I'm having them foil and non-foil. Go ahead, and it's still available. The sale ends on July 23rd. So you guys still have time to save money and grab this secret lair. So the next one is the Signets, and
those are the allied colored Signets.
Yep.
There's also the enemy colored Signets.
And then this is the Jen Bartel special guest secret lair.
Yes. I like that each one of the artist one has specifically one specific art that I really, really like.
Kind of sad. Which one is your favorite?
In the last one for Fiona, it's the Soulscarred Mage.
Yeah.
I just like that art a lot. The other one is, for this one, the Meteor Golem.
Okay. Yeah. I like the Archaeomancer art.
Yeah, Archaeomancer. Yeah.
Yeah, Archaeomancer. And then the last one, that is the... Give me one second. Oop, let me close there. Let me go here. Then the last one, that is, again, we got the other side of the Signets.
Yeah,
and
the
Mark
Signets
Poole.
And, yeah.
Mark
Daddy.
Poole. Exactly.
So
Daddy.
This whole thing, yeah, this is worth it. The Mark Poole one is 100% worth it. That wasteland.
No. It's just worth it because it's literally Mark Poole.
No,
exactly.
It's worth it because of Wasteland.
No. It has Counterspell. It's already worth it.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Let's discuss this Mark Poole thing. I'm going to buy that one. You guys know I don't buy any, but I'm going to buy the hell out of it because I love Mark Poole.
Counterspell and Brainstorm?
Wait. They gave some interesting confirmation. So they, just for clarification, Jose Angel tells us that the Signets are in etched foil.
Oh, that is interesting. I think it makes sense because since they're retro,
and the design,
order,
yeah.
Yeah, I think it makes sense for it.
Let me see. I think I have one around here. Give me one second.
So, obviously it is definitely worth it because it literally has a wasteland. What I do find interesting, and it's a little stealthy in terms of what Wizards doing, they reprinted the old art of basically Alpha Birds of Paradise.
Yes.
And I think that's a very sneaky way of getting away with printing old art that people love in a secret lair. And that's really going to upset collectors because a lot of the value, of course, it's because it's an old card, but a lot of the value does stem from being art that people generally love because it's so iconic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so sure. A Verdant Catacombs foil etched.
Nice.
It's really, really nice. I did like the foil etched ones.
So, okay.
Well, it has a star.
Something quick I want to mention on the Signets is they're made by Dan Frazier, and he made a playmat that instead of being the Signets, it's in the same art style but the Moxes.
Okay.
You know what's funny? Mox Pearl is in there. they shafted in white.
Wow. Even in the art.
Even in the playmat, they shafted white.
That's wow. So, so guys, what do you guys think? Do you guys think, this is the question for these. Do you guys think that it's a worthy investment as a collector?
Mark Poole, yes. For the Mark Poole one, 100%.
For sure.
Okay.
Everything else, you gotta dabble in terms of the secondary market.
And also what you like, because I really like that Mother of Runes, and I use Mother of Runes a lot. Like for the cube.
For me at least, if Carlos does get this one, I think that he mentioned that he will, and he's gonna get one for both of one for both of us. For me, I would get these just for the collector perspective. I do sell normally the non foil ones. I do sell them. I go straight to TCG Player because I keep the foil ones. For the previous ones, I have not gotten the Valentine's Day nor the Black History Month what, one.
They haven't arrived for you?
The Black History Month, yes, I have not gone to Carlos' place to get it. But the one for Valentine's Day, we have not gotten that one yet.
Okay.
Because of the whole delay of the Heliod issue.
Yeah, they're probably thinking how they're going to compensate you.
Yeah, exactly. But in general, the previous ones that I've bought from him, I've kept them in my personal binder due for collector value because I like the art. And I do have some of them in my commanders just for aesthetics. Again, it's just because of the aesthetics. Like the Damnation one from Seb McCain. I don't remember his Seb something. I do have his Damnation. I do have his Damnation in my commander, in the Golos one. And I would say that if you collect them, it's really fun. You know, again, it's all aesthetics at the end of the day. If you want to make your commander look pretty and nice, you know, I would still say that if you're only interested in looking for foils, buy the foil bundle. Don't go crazy and buy the big one unless you have an idea to sell the non-foil ones. Because you're going to be in a $444... well, let's say it's going to be $500 with the shipping. Yeah. So, you know. But it is interesting. I really do like the secret layers. The Mark Pool one is one of my favorite ones. We get classic art. It would have been much more cooler if the cards had old school borders.
Yes, but I think they did that on purpose.
You think that they did that on purpose?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, because the old border would imply that they're literally replicating a one-to-one of Alpha. And I think that they were being very, very careful because they're dabbling. They're trying to figure out how to work around some of the reserve list cards that they can print, like a Birds of Paradise, like a counter spell. And I know that this is going to be a very successful drop, obviously because of the Wasteland. But people generally love Mark Poole as their artist. So it's going to sell like bankbusters. And when they do, mark my words, the next couple of secret layers, you're going to dabble with another famous old artist, maybe like a John Avon or something like that, or maybe someone even older, and they're going to pluck really old, aesthetically beautiful cards that people remember, nostalgic cards, they're going to pluck them and put them in secret layer.
Wait, what was it called? Power Plant. Give me a second.
It'll be very interesting.
You know which secret lair I would totally go gaga if they make it?
Go.
With Mark Tedden.
Ooh. Mark Tedden's a good one.
Yeah. I love Mark Tedden's art. I still have the Emrakul, one of the last Emrakuls that he did. I have it signed by him. Oh my god. And that day that I met him, I went ballistic. Even when I met the Earthshaker Kenra artist, that was a once in a lifetime experience, having all my Kenras signed. Sadly that I could only find one foil in the whole Grand Prix. I couldn't find them all. That was the sad part.
Yeah.
So next topic of the night is Matt Sperling. I think JP is the one that knows more about this. So JP, take it away.
This ties into what we're going to
talk about next.
It's a two-in-one. So Matt Sperling, a pro player for Magic the Gathering, went on a little rant, and a lot of people just kind of went ballistic, and also it's kind of fun to just make fun of him, because it's a very out there take, not too out there, so because one of the reasons we're going to be discussing it. He said MTG judges on average are far more clique driven, approval seeking, whiny, and in group approval obsessed than competitive players are. Funny how they projected those criticisms onto us for so many years. Can't even take a joke about EDH without pulling the soapbox out. For those who don't know, judges are basically the original creators. Elder Dragon Highlander for EDH or Commander was created by judges, basically, for them to play in the meantime while between matches. So let me say, top EDH players of all time ranked. number one, it doesn't matter. The other three players can just gang up on them if they have a good start. As this gets some traction and the EDH player might be seeing it, did you guys have to buy Dublin Season version 14.8 and whatever the latest 4U Green and Black 7-7 reanimate some shit was for any price? No questions asked until they killed off Pro Magic to feed your addiction. I'm not okay. He's basically just a huge, like, he's just very, very much complaining about how, in a way, Commander destroyed pro play in Magic, like Pro Magic. And it's a very out there hot take. What do you guys think?
Okay, so Orengo, I think Orengo is in please stand by right now. So what do I think? I think that that is, I know that we don't rarely curse here, but I'm going to curse. This is utter bullshit. Like, come on. It's a format. It's sad that they blame Commander for everything. Because, oh, if you don't play any other format, let it be Standard or Modern or Legacy or Historic or whatever any other thing that they bring out, oh, you're damaging the community. No, because first things first, Commander is accessible. Second, Commander, you can use any card in Magic's history. That's one of the other things.
With a few exceptions, but yeah.
And with a few exceptions, exactly. It all depends on your playgroup. Let's be fair on that part. It depends on your playgroup. Three, it's cheap. You don't have to have a top tier commander to have fun with your friends. You can enjoy it. Number four is that you have a wide variety of brews that you can pick one that is your favorite. You can go monocolored, you can go double colored, tri-colored, or five color commanders. Or you can go from archetypes. You can make a square commander like I'm going to be doing. People have commanders in regards of one type, like bears or elves, or because the Dungeons and Dragons that they can build now with the new set. It's accessible. When you compare Modern and Standard, are two formats that are expensive. And let's not get started with Legacy. Because Legacy, you have to buy 500 plus cards in value, and sometimes you need one or more copies of it. And hello, who the heck is going to go ahead and sell their brand new card and waste 20 grand in a Legacy deck, and you still will be missing cards.
So I fully understand your thing, and I'm against his statements in general, but I'm gonna play a little devil's advocate for a bit.
Yeah.
And understand that as Commander has gotten to a more popular state, and it is currently the most popular format in Magic the Gathering, more people are going into the format. As more people go into the format, more diverse styles in play are being introduced.
Mm-hmm.
So we eventually are going to get people that play more competitively. We're gonna get more collectors into the game. We're gonna get more because we're going to get more competitive and collectors into the game, and specifically into the format. A lot more people are going to be buying the cards that in general have no other value outside of Commander. Even if some may retain value because of how old they are. So taking his example of Dublin Season, how Dublin Season, like I remember a few years ago, it got to see some play in some four color Planeswalker random decks. And other than that, it's just a Commander card. So that's mostly the reason why it's so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so expensive and people are clamoring for these reprints, they keep printing these cards in place of other cards that would be placed in the slot. And those other cards that will be placed in the slot, especially Dublin Season, if I'm not mistaken, the last time it's been printed, the last few times it's been printed, it was a mythic.
It's in Double Masters.
It was a mythic, no, right?
Yeah, it was a mythic.
I'm pretty sure in the first Modern Masters, it was reprinted as a rare. And that's the last time it's been printed as a rare. It's been a mythic. So any mythic in, or any possible mythic that would be in that slot that would be competitively viable is no longer there, because they add a card that inherently has no value out inside a competitive format, because these competitive players are buying it. And so more and more cards are being added in that way, and so and thus less people are getting the cards they need. Or the prices of cards, like you said, because Modern is very expensive, and generally Pro Play is very expensive. So the accessibility to these cards is less and less and less. Less people, that means less people are buying these specific cards. Mm-hmm. Less people are playing these specific formats, and it's slowly killing Pro Play. He mentions the seven mana 7/7 that can reanimate something, and he's just talking about how we'll waste any money to buy basically anything that doesn't matter, and because we're using that money to buy something that we wouldn't have any other effect other than in Commander, the prices are gouged up. And the cards, they keep printing those types of cards instead of competitively viable cards. Okay. I don't agree with that. I don't, like, in general, I don't agree with anything. But in his defense, it makes sense, but it doesn't. Because again, these few last years have been. Now this last year has been the most successful year for Wizards of the Coast. Orengo isn't back, so we can just transition properly to the next topic, because it revolves this. It makes no sense how they've cut $750,000 from a 1 million price pool, it's basically a quarter of what it was. It's a $250 price pool now. A million dollar price pool.
To say more, it was a tweet made by Understarsky that he says on the tweet, World's price pool gutted by 750K, which was expected but still kinda sad. Not sure how much I'll prep. Feeling zero motivation to play Magic at the moment, so I'm kinda hopping for a flat payout so I can just skip it. So this is sad. I'm going to be honest. It's sad because it gives more heaviness to the comment that Wizard of the Coast mentioned about pro players. And
well, they went back on their word. That's why they did this quietly. Because if I'm not mistaken, they had promised that they were not going to touch how this was, because that mentioned how Pro Play and Pro Magic tournaments were gonna change.
Yeah.
And then they say that this specific aspect won't change because it is a profitable area. And then they just change it, and they did it quietly, very very mm-hmm. quietly, because they just posted it into a page with their updates and their main page. And any other page, any other official page, did not send any messages about this. It just kind of happened, and that's one of the problems that it was. There was no communication.
It just happened. And it's sad. It's sad to see. My bad. It's sad to see that Wizard of the Coast is not. It's making the pro player life. Kinda impossible.
It's impossible now. They said it.
Yeah, because I remember that when I went to Grand Prix Orlando a couple of years ago, I remember that the one of the I forgot his name. Beautiful hair guy. Beautiful hair. That's what I remember. Reed Duke. So Reed Duke was there.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah, it's like I was there, and then I got to speak to him for a while because I wanted him to see my mono red deck by the time. And I did speak to him, like, I told him I did not expect like pro players, but there was a lot of pro players that you see on stream. They're like, oh my god, they're here. And then he did mention to me that normally these small Grand Prix events, they sporadically send different players just to, like, that they can compete and probably have the chance to win the prize money, even though they're under contract. And they're winning, I think it's from 50 to 60K a year with that Wizard of the Coast contract, being an official MTG pro player, plus as well that he's a host in for some events as well, that he's a caster. But it's really interesting that due to that, Wizard of the Coast is actually cutting ties with not only the pro players, they're cutting ties as well with streamers, because streamers don't have access to the events for MTG Arena no more. You know, it's sad that Wizard of the Coast is not letting the streamers and pro players do what they do, because it is cool to see your favorite player play the set beforehand. Like that you can be like, oh, I like how this mechanic works, I should buy the set to do that deck. You know, that because that was the whole idea. That's what happens. And us, I know that Orengo has played more standard, I think, than JP. But it was very common to see friends of ours net decking. Oh, this player played this Dimir Rogue or this Jund or whatever. And they would go to MTG Goldfish and do the whole list. And do the exact same list. Probably change one or two cards for situational purposes. But that's what the pro players do. They obligate the fans, or they make the fans of them get their favorite deck. And it's really sad to see this happening. It's really sad. It really is. Wizard of the Coast, I don't know what the heck are you doing. So, Orengo, you're muted.
They've been gutting the, basically the, JP, I'm gonna mute you.
Yeah, that
or mute yourself.
That cricket.
Yourself.
You can hear the cricket.
You have a cricket.
So,
yeah,
mute yourself. It is really loud.
So mute yourself unless you have to talk.
Yeah, it's really loud. I don't know where it is.
So mute yourself unless you have. There you go. So, jeez, I forgot what we're talking about.
They got it.
Yeah, they got it. They got it. The prize pool. But even then, they've been slowly, quietly, undercutting elements of the tournaments beforehand. They fired the moderators that were working on the discords that allowed to some of the events to be played a few months prior. And they didn't announce this. This was only known because some of the pro players were like, what the hell? And the streamers don't have access to the cards beforehand so they can make their content. And I do not understand why WotC is screwing the customer and streamers and the content creators and the pro players and basically everyone that buys their stupid product. I don't know why they keep screwing them over. The problem is that we keep buying their products. So that's also on us, because we are showing them, and we're voting with our stupid wallets. And I am culprit number one, although I buy in the secondary market. But still, I'm at fault, I guess. I'm at fault, you know. Yeah. We're all giving money to this company that slowly but surely just keeps gutting and destroying every element that makes this game what it is. They essentially just want to sell. Like, if it was up to them in the end, like, did you just say, ask why WotC screw people? I didn't ask. I just, it's baffling to me because.
Yeah.
They already didn't ask.
You just stated.
I stated.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure I stated.
They are screwing you.
They are screwing you. I remember when the pro players, the 64 pro players that were being paid 70k a year, that was cut, and people were fine. They were like, you know what, I get it, it's understandable, whatever. When they took out the moderators from the Discord, they were a little confused, but they were like, okay, fine, I get it, whatever. When they took the streamers, because a lot of the streamers are pro players, they took the whole thing about having the content before the set beforehand.
What the
they
heck?
Cut it that
Wait,
too.
Give us a second.
Oh, there we go.
There you go.
I think he's lagging severely. Is... Oh no no
no no.
John, no, do you wanna no, be editing no, that no. audio?
No. Bye. you're
Bob,
lagging, bro.
Like, Chris, you're lagging, and the audio is really really bad. I'm sorry, but it's really awful.
You're in
but
the
we
Matrix.
Love you.
We love you.
We love you. Basically, the final point is. But this is the thing that a lot of pro players are really upset about. Because at the very least, everything beforehand, for the most part, they announced it prior. So they prepared some of these pro players. Even if it was like a week before or whatever, they would at least let them know, hey, we're doing this. Screw you, but we're doing this. But this was like JP said, it was a stealthy thing. They didn't say jack shit because they already promised they were supposed to give you this prize pool. And there's no... reasonable understanding as to why they're cutting the prize pool. I do have a theory, and I'm going to end with that. I think that even though they did have the most successful year of Magic last year, and they made gangbusters on the secret layers, on the product, and all that, the arena experiment, I think deep down hasn't been that fruitful. I mean it in terms of Twitch. I do not mean it in terms of people playing, because it's free to play. People can play and then they quit, or they can just buy 1,000 booster packs, whatever. But in terms of viewership on Twitch, it only gets upticks when the new set comes out, and not even that, because now the streamers don't have access to it. But generally, in Twitch, no one's watching Arena. They're literally watching probably Pen Dry or like the new meta, but they're literally not watching
and if they are watching Arena, they are watching like the streamers that are already on the top, like Gabby Sparks, the Amazonas, all the content creators like the command Zone,
LSD,
you know,
Jim Davis,
exactly,
MTG Goldfish,
exactly. So it's already people that are already on like in that high top.
When they do tournaments, I mean, people know because we know, you know what I mean? But they do tournaments on the weekend and no one knows, and it doesn't like bump the numbers or anything at all. So I do think that deep down they realize this is not the thing. And I know, because when it first started, if you remember the promos, you remember the ads, they gave a shit ton of money to like streamers that never even play Arena to be in that ad, to promote it, to make it seem like that big of a deal. Right?
Danny Trejo was in an ad.
Yeah, he's been in a couple. Patton Oswalt, I think it was one of them too. Like, they give it a lot of money to promote Arena, but I don't think, because I think it's that they're not seeing the numbers on Twitch. I think it's literally just the Twitch numbers. Because I there has to be people playing Arena. There just has to.
Yeah.
There has to be. It cannot be us still buying paper product and that be the thing that's moving WotC. It can't be. Unless maybe it's the secret lair. Like, because it's such a big influx of money compared to like making a proper set and then selling it and distributing it and doing all these shenanigans, since they have a direct link to us with the secret layers. I don't know. It's weird. But I think that's my theory. I think my theory, it literally stems from the fact that they didn't see the Twitch numbers they wanted to see. They wanted to be like the next League of Legends. They went out all gangbusters. And when they were like Mythic Championship number 4, and they're still not seeing any numbers, they're like, screw this.
And they try to be the next Hearthstone, because Hearthstone is already produced.
That's true. And Hearthstone is it's pretty dead. Like, I casually watch Hearthstone players. No one plays Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super dead.
It is. It's really sad, because that's one of the reasons why I stopped playing Arena in streams. It's because of that. Because I have more viewers when I play other games, non-mainstream games. I have more people in the stream talking about the game than when I play Arena. I know that my the viewers that I've had when I play Arena, they do like the fact that I can predict what's going to happen if I am up to par of the meta. And but nowadays, watching standard, it's the same thing all over again. If you play a Dimir Rogues, the mono red deck is going to pop out of 5 matches, maybe 3 of them are mono red, and if you have a slow start, you're done for, you know? And it's not what you want. And it's really repetitive over and over again. And it's not fun to see the repetitiveness again and again in a format. So again, WotC should sit down and restructure what's Arena and restructure their pro players, because if we are going back to the gathering when the COVID numbers are much more down, or when everybody is vaccinated, that we still are required to wear masks in LGS stores. Well, it depends on the store though. But if you're vaccinated, you don't need a mask, but some LGS stores do still recommend it. But if we're going back to the gathering, they should focus once again on pro players that do play paper Magic, and to create the next Reed Duke or the next LSV. Because again, these people, I remember that Reed Duke, there was one time that Reed Duke just said that he would like to retire one day from Magic the Gathering and just enjoy the game, not as a pro player. And just like as a normal being. And not only that, one of the other things that is becoming very popular is celebrities. Celebrities are playing Magic the Gathering. We saw it in the previous episode of Game Nights. Post Malone buys and plays Magic the Gathering. Cassius Marsh, that we've seen in a lot of episodes of Game Nights, he opened his own store. And he still is, I think he's a linebacker. I don't remember the team, but he's still a linebacker in the NFL. You know, we have celebrities playing Magic the Gathering. Some of them have not popped out of the like, hey, I do play Magic the Gathering. I do enjoy it. I play with my friends. But it's really interesting to see them little by little like, hey, I play Magic. I really do enjoy it. I have a grade 10 Black Lotus in my safety deposit box because I know how much that's going to be worth in the future. But again, WOTC, do something about it, because one day we are all going to go on a strike. Probably, maybe it's not going to happen because there's a lot of million people that keep moving your product. But you know, it's really interesting on how it is. But guys, so this is the end of tonight's episode. You guys have any final thoughts of all of the things that we spoke tonight?
It was just kind of just explaining my thoughts on the Matt Sperling thing. I'm kind of want to go back just in case if Alejandro wants to.
I still have it here.
I agree with you guys, basically. Like, I was hearing the stream, so don't worry.
So you're hearing my. Okay.
No, don't worry about that. Yeah, I fully agree. All I'll say is, if you're interested in buying singles in Modern Horizons that are not fetch lands, or even some fetch lands, buy them, because the fetch lands keep creeping up just a little bit, and then kind of going down a little bit. But everything else is pretty good. Pretty good prices.
And as well, if you guys are interested as well in the retro foil etch, they're not. Some of them are not in a bad price. So yeah. Again. Start grabbing those cards before something happens and the cryptocurrency in these cards go high.
Yeah, that's the NFTs. Sorry, the NFTs. Yeah, chips are going to activate and they're going to go skyrocket in price. But for real, like, the prices are really good. Really good cards. It sucks that people didn't get to play too much with them because now we're getting the Forgotten Realms. You know, it's next month, but it keeps the ball rolling, I guess. Wizards all about pumping all the product, not even giving you a chance.
Sagas might be banned.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Winners and Saga, just wait, hold out for Versus Saga. If you wanted one, I bought one early because it was like at $24. There was no reason not to buy it.
At the moment you bought it, because it's now it's like almost $70.
Yeah.
What? $70?
Yes, I saw when I checked, it was a $70.
Well, depends on the one. I mean, I bought the cheap non-foil version. I didn't buy any foil.
You think I'm gonna ball out? I wanted the cheap one.
Are you sure? Versus Saga? Wait, give me a second, because that must have been like a jump, like a ridiculous jump in the last day or so. I kind of generally check these things almost on the daily because I like seeing how they fluctuate in price. It's at $27, you liar.
That was just a freak. Yeah,
but only it was a foil. I'm pretty sure the foils are at $70.
Well, the pre-release one is at $55. It's as low as 55.
Yeah, I can give you that. I'm pretty sure it probably was at 70, or the foil maybe it's at 70. But they're like going up a little up and down, because I did see it when I bought the Ursa Saga, it was 24. It went up until 35, and now it's kind of like going down again. But it's cool. Like, get your fetches, get them now, because you don't have an excuse. They dropped pretty heavily from where they were 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
3 months ago, 4 months ago. Get the fetches if you need them. Get everything else that you need on this set. Everything else is pretty good, pretty heavily priced, pretty nicely priced. And like John said, get the foil etches, because, you know, they look cool. They're a little darker than the normal foiling.
Yeah.
But it's a good foiling process, because I have the Commander Legends, and I bought basically all my fetches, I believe. No, all my fetches are extended, but everything else, I bought an Urza. Actually, bought my Urza. Because it was like $60. It was really low. Now it's like $75. I bought it foil etched. So okay. I wanted to have the little stupid star and the old border, because that was my stupid dream, to have Urza old border. So now I'm happy. My life is complete. But yeah, get them.
Get them, guys. Try and go ahead and find them. So we're going to go ahead, and next week, guys, we're going to be talking about the Mark Rosewater's large list, and be talking about what we expect, or what are our predictions for this Forgotten Realms set. So JP, tell the people where they can find you.
You can find me here in the Cardboard Cave Podcast.
With the cricket at what, 900?
Cricket friend. Quick and simple.
Then, Orengo, where can they find you?
You can find me at the Movie Guy Podcast. Well, you can find me here, obviously, talking about magic and talking about who wizards are stupid. You can find me in the Movie Guy Podcast, Tuesdays and Thursdays, where we discuss movie, like what we saw on the weekend, and like special topics of film. You can find me on my podcast, Cine Más Podcast. I don't have a topic for next week, but I'm brewing something. I'll give more information probably next week on a post or something. You can also find me on Cine Nerds with 15 and Richport, which tomorrow will be discussing the movie Monster and the movie Waves, which are both acted by this guy called Kevin Harrison Jr., if I'm not mistaken. Phenomenal actor. He's like a young dude who's done a couple of movies, but that kid can act the hell out of like a lot of young actors. That guy's on par with like Timothy Chalamet and stuff like that. That kid's like next level acting. Beyond that, you can find me with John, because I think we're going to record our second episode.
And our second episode will be recorded this next week. Yeah.
And basically, that's it, guys. Just Google me. Google my name. I don't have my thing today. Google my name.
Oh, God. So, guys, you can find me as well as at all my social media as BigBoss117PR. I do have my own streams every Wednesday and Saturdays. And then as well, you can follow my podcast at BigBoss117Universe, where the main show is Subtitles Required, where me and Orengo talk about foreign films. Our next film will be Burning. That will be our next episode for next month. And as well, in The Movie Guy, where we talk about movies, entertainment, and much more. And this next Monday, I will be having the final episode of all the movies for Resident Evil. So we're going to go ahead and see how bad these films are, and moving forward. And then lastly, Cardboard Cave. Go ahead, follow us, and just give us a shout out. Remember, if you guys want to be part of the show, Just comment below on this show right here or on any of our posts or write us directly in any of our social media. So we will see you guys in the next one. So see you later and see you next week. Bye-bye.